Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox here at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Well, we're still really busy working on our documentary, Revolution, A Love Story. And if you want to get more information on the documentary, you can go to the website to find out more info about it. But for the film, we interviewed famous revolutionary Angela Davis. And we thought the piece was so good, we decided to broadcast the entire interview here on the Soapbox. I'll be right back with Angela after this short break.
Since the beginning of time, mankind has waged war. Rarely has there ever been a noble cause for this slaughter. In 1935, between World War I and World War II, Major General Smedley Butler wrote a treatise from the perspective of a U.S. Marine career that spanned decades. This treatise was called War is a Racket. Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox and Piece of the Action have collaborated to publish the 75th anniversary edition. The U.S. military-industrial complex is still profiting while our young people are still killing and dying. The U.S. military-industrial complex commits massive resources to preying on our children, and we in the peace community must be proactive in stopping that. War is a Racket should be in every family home, school library, youth group, and peace group. Please go to www.warisaracket.net for ordering information. And follow us on Facebook at War is a Racket 75th Anniversary Edition.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. As I said before the break, my special guest today is Angela Davis. She is an American socialist, philosopher, political activist, and retired professor with the History of Consciousness Department at the University of California, Santa Cruz. She was the director of the university's Feminist Studies Department. Davis was largely active during the Civil Rights Movement and was associated with the Black Panthers. Her research interests are in feminism, African American studies, critical theory, Marxism, popular music, and social consciousness, and the philosophy and history of punishment and prisons. She wrote about the FBI's targeting of the Black Panther Party as part of its counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO. Also, she was tried and acquitted of suspected involvement in the Soledad Brothers' August 1970 abduction and murder of Judge Harold Haley in Marin County, California. Even though she had purchased the weapons involved, had written letters to one of the prisoners who escaped, and became a fugitive of the law after the murders. Angela Davis was twice a candidate for vice president on the Communist Party USA ticket during the Reagan era. Since moving in the early 1990s from party communism to other forms of political commitment, she has identified herself as a democratic socialist. Davis is the founder of Critical Resistance, an organization working to abolish the prison industrial complex. She was on the FBI's top 10 most wanted list for a time. Angela Davis, there is so much confusion about the terms capitalism, socialism, and communism. Can you briefly compare and contrast the philosophies?
Perhaps I'll begin with capitalism. Capitalism is an economic system that is based on the production of profit at the expense of workers who actually produce the products. And in many ways, you can say capitalism is based on a trick, and that trick involves the assumption that workers get paid for what they do. But in actuality, as Marx pointed out many years ago, they're getting paid for their capacity to work, their ability to work. And the difference between what they actually produce and what they actually get paid is profit. And in Marx's definition, this is the nature of exploitation. It really has little to do with a moral judgment against capitalists. It's simply the way in which the capitalist system works. works. Those who already have the capital exploit those who have nothing to sell but their labor power. And then if we move on, socialism is a system that is not based on the production of profit, but rather that's based on the satisfaction of people's needs, the fulfillment of social needs. Therefore, in a socialist system, it would make no sense at all for there to be profit generated from healthcare, because healthcare would be considered a right, and healthcare would be free, and education would be free, and housing would cost very little. Housing would be subsidized by the government. And then finally, communism, I would characterize as the ultimate stage of socialism. Of course, it's been said, using Marx's words, that socialism is from each according to his or her ability and to each according to his or her works. And communism would be from each according to his or her ability to each according to his or her needs. That is to say, everyone in a communist society would have all of their basic needs fulfilled, regardless of what their profession is, or regardless of whether they're unemployed.
Does a socialist system lead to communism?
Well, I would like to think that just as capitalism was or is a moment in history that should be transcended, capitalism demonstrates that people's needs can be satisfied. It generates the amazing productive power that can be generated by workers. Unfortunately, that is subordinated to profit. So socialism would use that productive power to begin to satisfy people's needs. And in the beginning, one would have a system in which, you know, certain things would not cost, but other things would. And in the end, one would think that society would be structured so that everyone's needs can be fulfilled. And so that someone who is disabled would not have to worry about getting the money to attend school or healthcare. I'm an optimist, and I think that we still need to move in that direction, at least insofar as our vision for the future. We should, you know, think about countries like Cuba, where they have demonstrated that it is possible to build a society in which education and healthcare and housing aren't subject to the profit motive.
What do you think of Venezuela's Bolivarian Revolution?
I think that the Bolivarian Revolution under the leadership of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela is really a beacon of light, not only for all of Latin America, but for the entire hemisphere. They've demonstrated in Venezuela that it is possible to begin to build a different kind of society. And just as Cuba has held out for all of these years, I can remember the Cuban Revolution and the triumph of the Cuban Revolution. I was in high school. And so we're talking about 1959, 1960. Here we are in the 21st century. And the Cuban Revolution continues to persevere. So that it's very exciting to see the developments in Venezuela, and particularly the sensitivity to people who have little, poor people, working class people, and the way in which the abundance of oil in Venezuela is being used to fulfill people's needs and not to generate profit for corporations like BP, who are then responsible for, you know, polluting the ocean and destroying marine life. It's a real breath of fresh air. I think for those of us who have considered ourselves socialist or communist for a long time, it has demonstrated that it was that our lives were indeed worthwhile.
We hear a lot that President Obama is a socialist, especially from the right spectrum of politics. What do you think, Angela? Is President Obama a socialist?
Well, of course, unfortunately, what we have seen over the last couple of years since Obama took office is the resurgence of a really vitriolic right-wing resistance. And they have learned how to use the old anti-communist tactics in very vicious ways. When I first heard these claims that Obama was a socialist, I thought, well, it would really be wonderful if Obama were a socialist. But unfortunately, it is in the same tradition as those who called Martin Luther King a socialist. And I think that if we didn't have that anti-communist pressure from the right, it would be possible for there to be a more effective movement in the direction of socialism.
Angela, what are your thoughts on so-called 21st century socialism?
I do think that we need to think in terms of a 21st century socialist United States of America. You know, otherwise, we assume that capitalism is going to be the future. And since the dismantling of the socialist community of nations in the early 90s, there has been this assumption that capitalism is triumphant, that capitalism is here and will be eternally present in our lives. And that's very sad if we have to think in terms of a future of exploitation. And you know, it's not only the economic dimension of capitalism that is so destructive. It's the ideological dimension as well. Capitalism posits the individual as the basic unit of society. To think of a future of individuals fighting to become more powerful capitalists is very, very sad. We have to be able to imagine a future in which community means a great deal to us, in which solidarity, in which there is care for those who are less fortunate, in which education is not a commodity, in which people, a society in which everyone has the right to education and health care and housing and jobs. So I'm holding out for that. I've been struggling since I was a teenager. I guess I might say I've been in the struggle too long to give up now.
Here in the United States, there's definitely a stigma attached to the word socialism. Can you explain that?
The word socialism has such a stigma attached to it because the media pundits, because the right-wing politicians have been able to draw on the old anti-communism, the notion that communism constitutes an evil empire, the idea that it is anathema to democracy. And what impresses me, however, is that young people are not always persuaded by the right-wing rhetoric. And a recent survey by the Pew Center indicates that that young people especially think of capitalism, or almost a majority, think of capitalism in negative terms and socialism in more positive terms. So I think that people are not always incapable of seeing through the lies and the deceit and the fraudulent representations of socialism. Many people are beginning to recognize that we need an alternative to capitalism that thrives on racism, that thrives on exploitation, that has polluted the environment and cares for nothing aside from the amount of money that could be generated from any given project. And it doesn't care for the future. Capitalists don't even mind the fact that there may be no planet available in the coming generations. They're only interested in the profit that is available at the moment. No sense of history, no sense of past history, no sense of future history. And I suppose I would conclude by saying that I learned long ago that history is really important, that we think of ourselves as agents of history, that we think of ourselves as products of history. And as a matter of fact, capitalism is a product of history. It came into being in history, and if it came into being in history, it should probably go out of existence in history as well.
Angela Davis, as a lifelong teacher, do you have a message for young people?
Well, Jose Marti, who is one of the heroes of the Cuban Revolution, once said that, children or the youth are the hope of the world. And my message to young people would be that they follow their sense of adventure, that they follow their need for creativity, because all of the wonderful things that we experience today have been visions and ideas in the minds of young people at one point or another. And I always say that as we grow older, we have to learn that it's young people who have the new ideas. And in that sense, we have to learn how to follow their leadership. When we're talking about the anti-war movement and the need to end the war in Afghanistan as well as Iraq, when we're talking about anti-racism and the importance of generating a movement that recognizes the extent to which structural racism is still a part of our lives here, particularly given the prison industrial complex with the more than 2 million people who are behind bars, the majority of whom are people of color. And in all of these movements, I see young people, taking the decisive steps.
What are your thoughts on the dominant two-party political system here in the United States?
Well, my sense has been for a very long time that the two-party system constricts any real imagination. And as long as we have a Democratic Party and a Republican Party, of course, that are tied to corporate interests, capitalist corporate interests, we're never going to be able to move beyond those capitalist interests. And so we, independent politics, many of us voted for Obama. As a matter of fact, I can say that that's probably the first time that I voted for a Democrat, because I've always voted for the communists or the socialists or the Peace and Freedom Party candidates or the Green Party candidates. So I think that today, more than ever before, at a time when we have the first African-American in office, we need to emphasize independent politics. We need to emphasize third parties. We need to emphasize a more radical political vision than would ever be possible under the auspices of the Democratic Party.
Angela Davis, do you have anything else you would like to add for my listeners?
Well, I suppose the only other thing I would say is that it is so important for people, particularly in the U.S. To question the representations of the dominant media. It is impossible to understand fully. It is impossible to understand what is going on in Venezuela if we rely on CNN, if we rely on the dominant media forces, and to consult independent media, consult progressive media. What's happening in Venezuela is so exciting. And it would be wonderful if more people in this country could even participate in that excitement and then begin to imagine what it might be like to transform the United States of America in accordance with a socialist project.
That was my guest, Angela Davis. I hope you learned something and were inspired. We're going to close out this program with the audio from a YouTube we found called He May Be a Communist from the 1950s. But before that, I'd like to thank Joshua Smith for recording this interview and my webmaster, Rich Bowser. As always, my special thanks go to Angela Davis for agreeing to fit this interview into her busy schedule and to you for listening. This is Cindy Sheehan with Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Tune in next week as we talk to Father Roy Bourgeois from the School of America's Watch.
In recognizing a communist, physical appearance counts for nothing. If he openly declares himself to be a communist, we take his word for it. If a person consistently reads and advocates the views expressed in a communist publication, he may be a communist. If a person supports organizations which reflect communist teachings, or organizations labeled communist by the Department of Justice, she may be a communist. If a person defends the activities of communist nations while consistently attacking the domestic and foreign policy of the United States, she may be a communist. If a person does all these things over a period of time, he must be a communist. But there are other communists who don't show their real faces, who work more silently.
By the early 1950s, Communist Party membership had declined considerably, but Cold War propaganda inflated its threat to fantastic proportions. An evil so pervasive that the whole society had to be mobilized to combat it.
May Day brings a wave of anti-communist sentiment as 100,000 march down New York Fifth Avenue in a loyalty parade. Everyone from vets to youngsters reveals his inborn dislike of communism. A united answer to those menacing our country's liberty.
Sergeant, check the kitchen. You look in the back. I'll be upstairs.
What is this? Where do you think you're going?
We have no time for explanations. Already we are 15 minutes behind schedule.
I don't care who sent your why. You're not going to take another step until I see your warrant.
Warrant? We need no warrants. As a member of the Young Communist League, your daughter has volunteered for farm work. She's to be transported immediately. The truck is waiting outside.
You say my daughter volunteered?
That is correct. Here's her signature. Requesting transport to the People's Collective.
Signature on that piece of paper is false. And everything you've said is a lie because my daughter would never leave here of her own free will.
Sergeant!
You've got no right to be in this house. I'm going to give you just 10 seconds to get out of here.
Daddy? It's true, Daddy. I did volunteer for farm work.
Linda, why?
The party convinced me that I should free myself of the lingering bourgeois influence of family life. I am ready. Do not interfere. It is for my own good.
And Comrade Donovan, do not think that your deviationist remarks shall be overlooked. They will be reported to the proper authorities.
Frightening.